Welcome to this episode of Accounting Stories. In this episode, my co-host Philip Joels and myself talk with Frank van den Borre. Frank is currently the Group Director Sustainability of Ageas. Ageas is a listed insurance company operating worldwide. We will talk with Frank about the importance of sustainability for an insurance company and the challenges the company currently experiences in the context of sustainability. Of course, we will blend this with some of his personal stories. Enjoy this episode. Frank, welcome to our podcast, and thanks a lot for crossing the Dutch-Belgian border this morning to come to our campus here at Tilburg University. You are currently the Group Director of Sustainability. Can you, in a nutshell, tell us what you have done before?
Yes, thanks a lot indeed for inviting me, and always a pleasure to come to Tilburg. Group Director Sustainability, yeah, that's now, I've been doing this since 2019. My career is a bit longer, almost 30 years in the meantime. I've been doing quite some different things. Actually, I started in industry. I've started working for another big Belgian company, Umicore, in those days still called Union Minière. And I think, even looking at what I'm doing currently, that we can almost start a journey there, because that's a company, for the ones who know this company a bit, who went through difficult times because of environmental pollution and all the stuff, and actually already completely reprocessed their business model in the late 90s of last century and the early 2000s. So it's a very early story where you could see that sustainability could be a driver for change and a driver for innovation. So then after these 15 years at Umicore, and now we're talking 2008, I joined Fortis, which also may for not everybody be a name that rings a bell, although, and unfortunately, within the financial crisis, only 8 months after I arrived, the company collapsed. And I decided to stay. I was at that time in the investor relations team, so talking to the big institutional investors, very sensitive position. But I thought that it was good to stay, besides other alternatives, not knowing what the future would bring. But I was really convinced about the need of having somebody, a team, willing to help all these investors who sadly, of course, lost a lot of money or had the risk to lose a lot of money and had to be helped as well. So maybe in a way, kind of also a social drive to do something with this. Then the story became nicer and nicer. And with the current chairman, our CEO in those days, Bart De Smet, and the team, we started rebuilding the company little by little, regaining confidence from the investors. And then thinking little by little about, where can this company, in what direction can we go? What can the activities be going forward? We had, of course, the pleasure or the luxury to have a good foothold in Europe, Belgium, basically, Portugal, UK, but also in Asia. So there was a growth perspective. And so little by little, that became more and more important. And then in 2018, Bart asked me to spend more time and coordinate the new strategic exercise, which we called Connect 21, and had to cover the period 2019 till 2021. And actually, that is the moment after, I was already talking about sustainability since 2012 with my history of Umicore, mm-hmm. of course, in mind, to say, Bart, besides the whole financial story, we have such a nice story in thinking about sustainability. But actually, it took until 2018, and the student protests, the climate change becoming, of course, more in the news. So you felt the mood, and also the mood in the group of people that were reflecting on this strategy, that sustainability had to become mainstream also within Ageas. I managed to get it in the strategy, and I said then to Bart, now I've been asking you, I've been begging you almost to have some time for this. So now I need to take up the challenge and start the implementation. And that's how I rolled into this job, which started from scratch.
So Frank, you moved from Umicore, a material mm-hmm. technology firm, to a service company, Fortis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So these are two completely different sectors. Yeah. Was this an easy adjustment for you, mm-hmm. or can you tell us a little bit more mm-hmm. about this?
Yeah, it was not. Luckily, I didn't ask myself that question in those days. To be honest, I was more thrilled by getting a new experience in a different sector. Although I had some friends telling me, "What the hell are you going to do in a bank insurance company?" Mm-hmm. But I was indeed more attracted by, discovering what in those days the bank and the insurance sector, knowing the industry. Was it easy? No, it was definitely not easy. And as I said, by the way, I really arrived in the most difficult period you could imagine. And that was not my choice, but it was reality. So I didn't have time to adapt. So I had to learn very fast. And okay, I probably didn't know everything at the start. But I felt it more like a challenge and enriching my experience. And oppositely, I also believe that having been in the industry and worked there for 15 years and having seen a lot at Umicore, I also have a certain background which is still today very interesting for my colleagues who've spent their whole career in the insurance industry. Mm-hmm.
So at Umicore, were you also responsible for investor relations there at some point? Or
at the end, but I did many things. And again, also that I think has helped to do what I'm doing today. I've had the privilege to work in subsidiaries, to do an M&A across the world, to work in finance, to be controller, really a lot of different things, which gave me a very broad experience, professional experience, of which I could pick bits and pieces, and well, may come back later in this talk, how this comes back.
So maybe one thing, like, as how are investors from Umicore, which is indeed a totally different firm compared to Fortis. How are they different? Do they like what is the difference in the questions they ask and how they approach the firm? They're like their horizon. Do you can you just did you notice?
Well, I don't know if they are very different. Basically, and by the way, in some cases, I was seeing the same persons being interested in both companies or in more companies. Is there an evolution? That's another question in what they typically are interested in. So far, institutional investors you tend to meet, their first priority are the financials. Mm-hmm. And whether that are the financials of an industrial company or an insurance company, it's about profits, it's about dividend, it's about growth perspectives. It's perhaps a bit more in an insurance company about the solvency, which is, of course, an important concept. But the basics are the same when you talk to these people. So I wouldn't see a big difference. But of course, you need to know the business model. That is different for sure. So. Yeah.
So you indicated that in 2008, the timing to move to Fortis was not the best timing. You entered into the worst global crisis periods that you typically see once in a lifetime. Mm. Did it somehow, this whole experience, did it shape your way of thinking? Yeah. Did it affect your later career in any way?
Well, I think, and again, with all respect for what happened, and again, the sad stories we all know and which I've been experiencing myself, I would say with, now in the meantime, 15 years hindsight, yes. The fact of having been there, and it was not as pleasant as I may be giving the impression right now, to be there in those very difficult times. But having been there, having seen that, having gone through it, having been part of the team to try to solve and help, I do think that it gave me another perspective of what a career could be, even a professional career, and how you have your personal ambitions. But in the end, you work for a company, you work for investors, people, clients, customers. In at that moment, in a very, as you say, unprecedented situation, and you try to help, and you think about what these people have gone through, I discovered certain aspects of myself and of what drives me, which maybe came back later on as well in my commitments.
Yeah, maybe like you are now the group sustainability director. Could you give us some insights on like what are you doing on a daily basis? Mm. You already mentioned we work on the implementation of the sustainability strategy, which means you're already with Ageas in a somewhat more advanced stage. We know many firms they just think at this moment. You're already working on the implementation. What does that mean? working on the implementation?
Well, it's never a dull day. That is the first thing I can tell you. I don't think there's a standard agenda. I should also say that 4 years ago, a day looked probably different than what an agenda or what a day looks like today. And that is also, of course, great. I mean, it's never boring. What I discovered by taking up this challenge is that sustainability, and indeed 4 years, 5 years ago, I was actually, first of all, thinking, how can I explain, first, how can I learn myself what we need to do if we want to implement sustainability within Ageas? And then, what does this mean, this topic? How am I going to explain this to my colleagues, to my management, to my board, in a way they understand? Because the topic is much more complex, people imagine. So that was, if you would ask me, basically what I've been doing in the first months, build that story based on what we strategically said we would do, but integrate it in the broader picture. And yeah, go out, you could say, teach and preach a lot, with a lot of passion and hopefully inspiration. Little by little, see that people got convinced, got really enthusiastic, and that gave me energy to continue. And then little by little, you also start implementing it. And today, we have it in the strategy, so it's a bit more implementing a number of things. We can come back on that.
So, in order to convince people that sustainability is important, like, do you use numbers or conceptual thinking, or does that vary? What is?
I think I first of all try to touch upon their hearts. Also try to show that the concept sustainability was not that far away of what they already did or do. My impression, and I think that's not just me telling this, is that some people are a bit afraid. They say, well, okay, we need to do things completely different, and they are not interested. Most people are not interested, you know, in doing things differently. So I wanted, first of all, to say, no, what we already do today is great. I mean, I could really give examples and try to find examples to say, look, at Ageas, we have already quite a lot of very good things we do. Actually, if it's more a matter of making a consistent story of all this, and then, of course, see where we can add bits and pieces to make the story even richer. And that's how I tried to bring the topic closer to them.
So you're I think you're someone who has a lot of energy for the topic. Where does that energy come from? Like, what gives you energy in, like, continuing what you're doing? Because, you know, we all know that when you talk about sustainability, you get like quite a lot of opposition, even today. So what gives you the energy to just keep pushing?
That's a nice question. Well, I think that's must be passion, that must be conviction. Maybe it's probably my nature. I cannot change my nature. We should ask my parents why I'm like this. But okay, I've always been doing things with passion, so that's a bit the red line in my career. But okay, I told you that I've seen this at Umicore. I've seen the impact it could have on a company. And okay, I was proud of to be, and I'm still proud having worked there. And I've seen what happened with Fortis, and I was part of that core team, having gone through the whole exercise of rebuilding the company. And okay, it gives me a mission as well to see if we can build the Ageas 2.0 version, you could say. And okay, that are typically the type of things that drive me. Okay, I also have in my private life perhaps a number of other passions, so it must be probably part of my who I am.
So I witnessed, Frank, today that you were very passionate also to our students during the two guest lectures that you gave at our university here. if you would look at the communication on sustainability, and you would divide the audiences between internal and external audiences. Today it was external students. How would you actually divide these two? Like, what proportion would be external? What proportion would be internal?
And what do you mean by proportion?
Proportion, like, would you spend most of your time on internal stakeholders within the company, convincing specific divisions, management team, what have you, about sustainability topics, or would you rather also bring the message outside of the company to investors, to stakeholders? To
well, let's say that I'm available for both, and I think that is important. It's also in a way maybe linking back to my past experience as investor relations, where in a different role and at that time more focused on the financials, but also talking to shareholders constantly, i.e. the external world. But it was also important to explain to the colleagues what you typically do in such a job. So here, I think it's probably 50-50, or it depends period by period. But I think both are important because, as I said, you need to, well, I still every day need to explain to my colleagues what we're doing, why I need them. It's not my hobby. It's a journey for all the people in the organization. And hence, I need and I have to free up part of my agenda to do these kind of things. And then at the same time, just as our CEO is doing, our chairman and other people of management, all my people in the management team have a role to spread the story to the external world, to make sure that they also see in what direction Aegeas is moving, to hopefully bring part of that passion and conviction to the external world. Yeah.
Okay, so in the second part, we dive deeper in a couple of questions, and like I'm pretty sure I have a couple of Aegeas products, so I'm one of your customers. But could you also explain us a little bit more, you know, what are the different business parts of Aegeas, and also for, let's say, broadly spoken, an insurance company, why is sustainability important? And maybe that's a question you have heard quite a lot from investors or whatever, but just try to convince us why is it important?
It's a very obvious question. And again, here my industry background comes back. I think for industrial companies, people will almost immediately feel, okay, there is typically an environmental aspect. Industrial companies have to work on the environmental impact. What I like about an insurance company, even if it's less obvious to immediately say, okay, what can we do to build a more sustainable world? I think that our potential is much bigger. And it's not just me saying this. I could refer you to Michael Porter, famous Michael Porter, professor, Harvard Business School, that in the insurance industry is probably the first industry to implement sustainability and to create impact. And we have many ways to do this. And so, of course, we have our insurance products, the core, the insurances themselves. And okay, what do we see? We see that we live in a changing world, obviously. I mean, with new societal challenges, mobility, health, aging, the climate change, of course, sustainable cities. Well, if you think a bit further on our products and what we do, then you can see that we can build solutions that take into account the changing behavior of our customers or potential customers. And then the question is, can we adapt our business model, our products, to answer these challenges? Then the second layer is the investments. We manage typically, based on the figures of end of last year, we have about 85 billion assets under management. Yeah. That's a huge figure. If you imagine what the company can do with 85 billion to contribute to a more sustainable world. And okay, these investments are there as well to create financial return for customers on certain products, but you can also invest in projects which at the same time have a contribution to society. So I think that are the two essential things where you already see how an insurance company can do something. And let's not forget the social aspect, which makes that story even richer, because we all know that insurance policies or insurances are one of the critical or crucial elements to try to integrate the less advantaged people to be part of society, of the active society, to give that cushion, to give that comfort. If something happens, then they have protection.
Mm-hmm. So I think in as an insurance company, you can really drive behavior of people. I think we all have insurances, and because we have them, we behave in a different way. But so what is a company doing to drive behavior of people in a more sustainable way?
Yeah. We should be able to drive behavior, but I don't dare to overdo that. But okay, you can make that tangible if you think about the bigger attention that goes to prevention, for instance.
Yeah.
That to me is one of the first aspects I have to think about of where, okay, maybe health, in the past.
You mean health, like for instance, like health, more
but,
prevention?
But think about mobility. I mean, making people aware to drive safe, more safe, or to drive slower, to drive less. Think about how you can warm your house in a more energy efficient way or use less energy. I mean, it's maybe not our core ambition as an insurer, but then you can say, okay, if I can help or if we can help also to make your house more energy efficient by doing the right investments, you make the house more comfortable, you maybe make it even safer because it's newer. It's also safer against, I would say, fires or whatever.
So
I think in many ways we can try and I think we realize that as an insurance company, we should help to help our customers change their behavior in the good way where possible.
Yeah. Because that is like that is something completely different than just selling insurances, what we have seen 20 years ago.
For sure.
Do you also see that you need like different type of employees to get that implemented, or?
Well, I think definitely. I think indeed insurers also like to see customers in good times and not only in bad times, where our biggest role is to help our customers if something goes wrong. That's the key moment where you can demonstrate the value of an insurance company. But of course, we'd like to be there, and I'm now paraphrasing the sentence our Belgian insurance is using, company is using. We want to be a supporter of your life, so we want to be there at every moment in the life of an individual. Do you need other profiles? Well, I think, and again, that's also one of these topics in sustainability. Every company wants a more diverse workforce, and diversity goes beyond the gender discussion. And I do think we realize that a state-of-art insurance company must have people with different backgrounds in order to respond to the new challenges or the new opportunities.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
So when you develop, for example, new products, do you see trade-offs between environmental goals that you try to pursue? You mentioned the insulation of homes and these types of things versus the more social goals that you... Are there sometimes trade-offs? Or is it always clear-cut? Okay, that's what we need to do.
I think that's absolutely a fair question, which pinpoints out the complexity of the topic. I mean, thinking about sustainability is not black-white. It's not about easy solutions to problems, because you constantly have to make a trade-off between different interests of different priorities you can put forward. And let me illustrate maybe with one simple example, but hopefully it makes it clear. We could do something good for climate in our car insurance by bluntly saying we will not insure older cars anymore. But then you know that potentially you are excluding a certain part of the society. And let's think about the elderly people, retired people who may not buy new cars so fast anymore as typically the active population. And if you then take away from those people, or if you avoid them to be mobile to go out because they can't afford a new car, well, then maybe you're not doing the right thing from a social perspective. And that is just one example. I could give you many examples like this to illustrate the complexity and the fact that decisions, business decisions, taking into account, let's say, sustainability principles, you really need to reflect carefully on all the impacts and then take a conscious decision how you want to implement things.
So it seems to me that this is a journey. A sustainability journey, and I mean, it's challenging. And then you have also the reporting aspect, because you need to report it to the external stakeholders that you are doing the right thing for them or for most things. So how do you consider this journey? How do you actually see the elements that are important for this journey to be successful? Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Sure. Well, I think that in a sense, also an answer to the question, how does your day look like today? Well, 4 years ago, I was more spreading the story. I was more giving the broad picture. I was more telling about all the different things we could do or we had to do. But today, and I think not only for us, but for most companies, listed companies and smaller than listed and others, we need to also make sure we are ready for the implementation of a lot of regulation, European regulation or international regulation, United Nations recommendations, mm-hmm. which are part of European regulation. And indeed, there's quite an important reporting aspect. Now, I'm convinced that, in a sense, it's good. The fact that this sustainability topic should, via regulation, lead to some standardization and some disclosures which normally should more or less look the same for all companies will be also audited. Well, it should lead to some consistency in terms of public information, and that hopefully helps as well to the credibility of what will be reported by companies on what they actually do. And yes, I'm spending quite some time on this to make our company ready for that. Making it ready, it means that we really try to embed the non-financial reporting within the regular processes. And here you see, and I'm very happy with that, more and more that our finance colleagues are stepping in. They do realize that the fact that in the financial world, we are used to this kind of processes for decades, the non-financial world is slightly and slowly moving in that direction, and I'm sure that this will be the biggest revolution in that aspect of a company in the coming decade to bring non-financial reporting to the same level of quality and professionalism as the financial reporting.
So GIAS is, of course, a large listed company with more than 40,000 employees, and I can imagine you have a lot of resources to address all these regulatory challenges and these changes. But on the other hand, I mean, you have to look at the whole value chain and measure certain things there. And maybe some of the partners within that value chain are not as fortunate as AGS, do not have all these resources. How do you handle these challenges that these companies in your value chain experience?
Well, the size of the team is nice, but it's not that I have like hundreds of people working on this. I'm happy that
is that a claim for more employees in your
No. I'm happy with the resources we have, and I have also a very dedicated and team with having the same passion as me. And in general, I mean, you see a lot of interest and energy to within the colleagues in the teams to make it happen, typically on top of everything they already do today. So that also shows their commitment to do it. But okay, yes, then if you then talk about the smaller companies that also are part of the European regulation or in scope of this European regulation, I do agree with you, Philip, that for them it must even be a bigger challenge, because the ambitions of Europe are pretty high and sometimes also a bit criticized of being too ambitious and not easy to realize. And we also face certain challenges where we say, okay, how are we going to do this in the coming 18 months in order to come to meaningful information to disclose? Because, and okay, also on the one hand, because we need to do certain things, and in some cases the regulation is not yet stable or it's not yet clear even how to do certain things. And then on some things you depend, as you rightly say, point out, on what other companies will disclose or can make available, and you have even less control on that. Then that brings us to that topic of value chain, which is one of the more challenging concepts within the new European directive, CSRD. So I'm as curious as you today, because I'm only at the start of the implementation. In the coming 12 months, let's say, we hope to see clear and to have further progress on this. But it's still a bit of a black box today.
Yep. I have like a letter in front of me, and it's written by the chairman of the Association of Accountants, Accountancy Europe, and it's addressed to Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission, indicating that, I mean, the way the regulatory framework is now evolving, it's going a little bit too fast, according to the accountants. They also question the cost-benefit analysis, and they also fear that there is not sufficient public consultation. And many of these new regulations, and especially on the reporting side, are not tested in the field. So they consider everything as pretty high risk. So is this consistent with what you said before, that many of the companies in the industry, in the insurance industry, but in many other industries, are not there yet for this whole set of rules?
It's certainly a consideration, and I think we must be conscious of the challenges ahead of us, in the sense that indeed all the regulation is not yet stable, not all the concepts have been clarified. How Europe sees the implementation, how to do it. Think about double materiality, think about value chain, think about measuring scope 3 emissions for your value chain, and how are you going to collect relevant data from your customers, as an example, that are definitely not easy or difficult topics to tackle. And if the quality of the exercise and the disclosures related are not good, okay, then you may lose credibility, and Europe may lose credibility. Some geographies or some continents say, or some companies say, that the ambitions of Europe are a bit too high here. But okay, I can also understand the agenda of Europe. We want to be a forefront with Europe. We want to set the example. Companies have an important role to play. Does it make sense to delay for another 1 or 2 years? I mean, there's a momentum. If you delay, maybe the momentum gets lost. And then when we know that some of the issues are so urgent, there is no time to waste. The question maybe will be, and that's also how we try to approach it, it's a step-by-step approach. And okay, we know that information will be audited. So okay, quality must be good. But if there is enough pragmatism at the start as well from all the readers, also from auditors, that in some cases every company will do a best effort, let's hope then that they give time to companies to progressively adapt, improve, maybe not by 2025, but by 2027, 2028, the quality of the disclosures will be top. And then in the end, the goal will be reached, and then everything is okay.
Yeah, so I think it's also, it's going fast. And I think I'm in accounting research now for about, well, not yet 20 years, Philip, you a little bit longer. It's maybe the first time that we see that things go so fast. But on the other hand, we also need to go fast. You know, you say there are some urgent issues. So I think we need to go fast. Do you also see that in your firm, that people understand that we need to go fast and that GS can make, like, I will not say can make a difference, you know, maybe. But do you see that, the sense of urgency that you can change things in the firm, also at the executive level, that they can... No, that we need to go fast?
Definitely. I cannot complain about the commitment of my board, of my top management. It's our new CEO, he's CEO since 2020, Hans de Kuiper, who himself said, look, Frank, after everything you've been doing and thinking about the future of Ageas, I'm convinced that we need to put sustainability central in our strategy, really embed it in everything we do. That's also the way we phrased it in our current strategic plan. And there is full support to make it happen. But okay, meaning you still need to explain and sometimes also come with a good analysis. And there are many options as well. On you can take the most ambitious approach. In some cases, and it is maybe better to be a bit more pragmatic, because we are listed. I mean, we also need to think about, and you need to have a balanced approach in some cases. That's probably the more smart way of thinking about sustainability in a company. But no, definitely.
So maybe another question related to something that you said about your team. So you have a certain team, like, what are profiles that you're looking for, like with experience immediately coming from, let's say, school, university, whatever? Like, what are you looking for now at the moment?
I would say a bit of everything.
A little bit like you then.
In a sense, no, I think that the broad experience, a broad experience is good. I mean, as I try to explain, thinking about sustainability in a company, you need think it helps if you can think about, if you can think in many ways, and if you can think about the different processes and how these people need to interact, how ideas have to come together to come to a well thought over concept or proposal. And so, yes, generalists, typically people that are capable to handle different things, are more than welcome. But that also means that for certain areas, I'm very keen to have good specialists, good experts. I mean, in legal, I'm happy to have some people that are in the meantime knowledgeable on all the regulation and that can really help us to think carefully about that regulation. Or if I think about the risk department, which is, of course, crucial in an insurance company, I need people who are willing to step up on climate risk models. When I was talking 3-4 years ago to my colleagues about the potential 20-year to 30-year risks of the of the global warming, we said, okay, that should be okay, that should not be an issue. In the meantime, the knowledge has increased, and now they are thinking about building new models, different models from the ones they used to make, to try to estimate what we're heading to, just to give you that example. And that goes for every function in the organization, where I'm happy to have colleagues that in their domain can think along with us.
Like, you know, we also, of course, deliver students to the job market. So do you find that your, like, your young people, they are well-trained, they are well-trained enough, or like, what is your view on that?
Yes, I do think so. And I have the privilege of having a few sons also studying, and I can compare. And sometimes the comparison I'm making is when we were young, long time ago, internet was starting, even laptops were not yet common in those days. Mobile phones were just introduced. So we had to go through that change, but we already learned to work with computers, to learn to work with emails. And we were the young generation in those days. And for the older generation in those days, that was sometimes completely impossible to make the bridge. In the world of today, and I tried, of course, in my role to step up on sustainability, so I may be the outlier, but for the young generation at university, and I'm happy that I could give courses again today, this is bread and butter. This is mostly, I think, part of their normal curriculum, or they, by purpose, choose to follow a course on sustainability to see how it affects their domain of study. So in my view, the young generation, which is already working or about to start working, will come in an organization, and even more than the current young generation, who is now in 20s, early 30s, and is challenging the others often, not always, but often, that sustainability is common and is the way forward.
Okay. We are on the right track with our education, Philip.
That's the good answer. News. That's very good news.
That I get from it. So, Frank, to close our podcast, we have a common theme, and that's like a personal story. So we asked you to come up with like a song, book, movie, painting, and to tell why this is special for you. So what have you chosen?
It was not an easy question, to be honest, because I have quite some interests in culturally as well in different things. So the question was, okay, which one would I like to put forward to inspire the ones listening to this podcast? I could have thought about a song or a singer, but that's maybe a bit old-fashioned, but you may know that I'm an absolute fan of Prince. I'm not sure that I could give here an inspirational message besides his passion and his creativity, which was definitely there for the ones who like him as well. No, the one I've been choosing is maybe a more recent experience, which honestly struck me, and it's a very recent Belgian movie, but there's also a book from an Italian writer, which is called The Eight Mountains, and the movie was released last year and was actually in Belgium, but I think in the whole of Europe, very much appreciated. And the nice story is it's about a father and a son having a difficult relationship in Italy, The father likes the mountains. He brings his son to the mountains and he tries to convey the passion for the mountains and the walking. And then the son also, and I'm not going to describe the whole book because
please, the book is on my desk, so I still need to read it.
But okay, the nice thing is, and it reminds me to what I'm trying to do in sustainability, that the idea is that the father brings the boy to the top and he shows him he tries to bring over the passion to do that. And the fact of the passion of going to the top of the mountain and the climb to the top with all the challenges, which, again, I'm not describing the whole book, but then he links it to the challenges of the life of the growing up boy to becoming an adult with all the challenges it has. I must admit that a book, so Paolo Cognetti is the writer and the book is The Eight Mountains. I think it's a very inspiring book also for the sustainability journey, to be honest.
Okay. I'll definitely going to read it this summer, promised.
Do so, that.
Maybe one last question, like, you know, this is a podcast hosted by Tilburg University. We have many young students here. You also talk to them today. Could you just, to close this podcast, what is your number one advice for having a good career and a good life at the same moment?
Yeah, well, as I said, I have a professional passion, but I also do still some things besides my work, amongst others being president of a football team. So that's maybe a first advice.
Yeah.
Try to have a good balance between private and life and professional life, but always bring in passion, always do things which you like to do. And maybe the thing that has driven my career, and I've also been inspired by some great people I've been meeting throughout my career in that respect, or I had the pleasure to be working with them. And if I go back to my professional career, and I was telling you, I've been starting at Umicore, in those days called Unominiere, for the ones knowing Belgium better. That was not an obvious choice, for sure, because the company was in deep trouble. And I had a lot of people around me saying, "You're completely nuts, crazy. What are you going to do there?" And I was really attracted by the fact that things had to happen. Mm-hmm. And again, I had people around me saying, "You have to come to this company and we'll do this and you will see, we will do great things." And okay, I said to all my friends and people around me, I take the challenge. Then I moved to Fortis, and when I chose for Fortis, it was a different story than the final one, because it was the growth story, the ambition to become a world leader. But then 8 months later, it was something completely different. And I could have left the ship and go for something else, but my idea was no. I mean, I think I can do good things here. Maybe a nice story will be created, but there was absolutely no certainty, by far not. But I felt the need to be there and to try to help and do great things. And in the end, it as I said, it little by little turned into a fantastic story, which it is today. So maybe again, you see that thing of when you feel it's right and it feels right for yourself, just do it. And I'm not saying you don't need to listen to people around you. Sometimes you can make bad choices. But in my case, I think if I look back, it turned out very well. And I can only look back with a lot of joy and proudness. And also I have the feeling, it were the right choices and I have been able to do good things. And, and I have also the impression that I took a lot of good things away in my career by making those choices the same for what I'm currently doing.
You need to be courageous in a way too.
Yes.
To stay at Fortis in that period,
difficult times,
I think you need to be courageous.
You needed to have a conviction but okay, never felt like this. It felt natural for me, but okay, to quote our values, we have a value which is to be daring, and I've probably tried to be daring there. So it's to others to judge, but I think that it were daring choices. But as we try to explain to our colleagues, if they apply those values, try to be daring from time to time, it will pay off later on. And that's how I think what you can tell to students as well.
Well, they will definitely listen to this podcast. So I would like to thank you for this podcast. It was like a really nice podcast. We are looking forward to the next steps of Ageas and wish you all the best for the future. Thanks a lot, Frank.
Thank you, Frank.